Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. And it's kind of a sad day for me because this is the last show we're going to shoot in this studio this year. So going forward, we're going to be set up in a little temp studio over in some old wing of the old MSNBC building. And so
Cobwebs.
It won't look the same, but don't worry, it'll just be temporary. They're doing some work on this building. We'll be back in the second week of January.
So it'll be like cobwebs, you know.
Well, hopefully I can get the cobwebs down before we start shooting.
Hanging from the ceiling, you know, ceiling tiles that are broken.
There are things or people hanging from the ceiling, but, you know, it's
things
Halloween,
are people.
So it's all right. Yeah, no big deal.
So you look at it, is that a Halloween decoration? Yeah. I'm not sure.
The MSNBC staff or something, who knows, you know.
Poor
yeah,
interns.
But we'll be back. It's, you know, it's just going to be a temporary thing. So don't let your heart tremble on that. All right, so first question from Eddie. I have a Windows 7 SP1 64-bit machine. A couple days ago, I started having a big problem with Windows Explorer. Whenever I try to open a new Explorer window, it gets stuck, hangs, sometimes for a minute, and then opens. This only happens with new Windows. Navigating inside an open window between folders is okay. And I think it reflects on Word or maybe other programs, since Word got stuck a couple of times, which never happened before. Another strange thing is that there's one Windows that opens fine, the libraries window, the one pinned by default to the taskbar. This has no problem to open, and I've tried to use restore point to a known good state, or so I think, but that didn't help. What can be done to troubleshoot?
So this one was an interesting question. We did go back and forth on this. Usually when someone asks me, you know, I've got an Explorer problem, one of my first things is like, okay, what did you install?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you did that to me this morning.
I do to a lot of people. It's like, it's possibly an add-in, you know, it's a shell extension, blah, blah, blah. Went back, nothing was installed recently for it, okay? So then my next step is to go, okay, does it repro as another local user account? Because that'll usually differentiate between something that got installed on a per-user basis.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, it actually didn't happen on another user account. So you logged in as another user, worked perfectly fine there, no problems. So I got him to take a dump of the Explorer process. And through taking a look at the dump file, I was able to figure out that he'd actually made a junction point to a non-existent USB drive with his user profile. So basically wanting to move user data to this external drive and link it in as a junction, but he'd unplugged it. So when you're opening up the Explorer window, it's trying to find it, and it couldn't find it, so it was timing out, and that was that 1 minute timeout. So then everything would go back to normal. So basically, that was the end resolution to this, is that, you know, since this external drive is gone, if you're making a junction point to that, you have to delete it,
yeah,
or else you're gonna get these timeouts. Now, if you can live with the timeouts, then great.
Nobody got time for that.
Again, Zen, dude.
Yeah.
Zen. That's one of the pitfalls of making links to removable drives.
And so how do you get rid of a junction like that?
You just actually delete the directory name.
Okay.
So it's actually pretty simple. And after you did that, everything is fine.
Cool. Okay. I went to touch my screen and I think we could break this week. So
I have a bunch of different machines, some of which are touch and some of which are not.
Yeah.
I'm constantly doing that. It's like,
smudging up the screen. Yeah, it's
like,
awesome.
No touch on this thing. Damn it.
Yeah, glad I got the high gloss on here because it doesn't show up at all. All right. From Rod, I've got a desktop HP Pavilion Elite, which is approaching 4 years of age. Right now, changing desktops isn't feasible, and I've got a really good laptop, but I want to keep what I've got on the old desktop. My hard drive on the desktop is making lots of sounds that aren't too encouraging. I know how that is. I've been asking around for what I might do and suggested that I get a new hard drive equal or greater in size, then make an image of my current hard drive with the new hard drive. It was also recommended that I use Acronis True Image to back up my current hard drive to the new one. Honestly, this sounds like a great idea if it works, because I don't want to reinstall my apps, my Zune library, and all the rest. So what I'm writing to you two about is to find out if you think this sounds like a great plan.
No problems with it. I mean, you can use Acronis, you can use the complete PC backup that's in Windows itself in order to install to a larger hard drive. I've used Acronis before. I've used the built-in complete PC backup before, and not a big deal.
Great. And we're just sitting here dinging. We've got our sounds on, your screen's locking up. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so that sounds like a good idea. And since he said hard drive, you know, he can always just pull that hard drive out. He could do this, pull the hard drive out. If it doesn't work, he should be able to put his old hard drive back in. You'll be okay.
Yep.
So it's a good
kinda... But just don't put them both in at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a decent plan, you know, you got a little fallback if something goes wrong there. So.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're gonna go for, since you're hearing Soundstorm, it's gotta be a platter drive.
Yeah.
If you're gonna go and upgrade the platter, you know, make it a good one. Don't skimp on it, you know.
So a black drive, you're talking Enterprise or something.
I wouldn't go necessarily Enterprise, but a Western Digital Black would be, you know, a really good drive to go to. You know, 7,200 RPM, 10,000 RPM.
So what do you think about the green drives, the Green Caviar drives?
The latest Green Caviar drives, like, released in the past year and a half, are actually pretty decent.
Yeah.
Again, if I'm on a desktop, if I'm on anything other than a laptop, I don't care about power.
Yeah.
Same I really here. Don't.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, the green drives, they're good for their power, but they're variable spin.
Yeah.
I'd rather just go something for super reliable, you know, pay the extra $20, you know, just get a far, far more reliable drive that has a better mean time before failure.
Well, FDBF. The thing that I like about the green drives is obviously they're cheaper. So
they're cheaper,
good.
Sure, yeah.
But I've read in the past that if you use those drives in a RAID, it can be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I know my drives are probably going to end up at a RAID at some point in their lifespan.
You don't use greens.
I do have some, but I try not to get them when I can. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of deals on the black drives.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, whenever I buy hard drives, I get them in bunches.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'll buy four or five of them at a time, just so, you know, I might use them in a RAID, I might not use them in a RAID, but I can easily swap them off.
All right, Mr. Moneybags. That
it's
must
cheaper.
Be nice. I do get two at a time because I need my drive and the one to back it up.
Sure.
And since they're usually bigger, then, okay, I'm getting a 4 terabyte drive now, and now I gotta get another one to back it up.
Yeah, I don't tend to go for the highest capacity drives because you're paying a significant premium on that.
Yeah.
I'd much rather get, you know...
The next step down is usually the best price point.
Next step down or, you know, like the 4 terabytes are the latest or the largest you can get right now. But, you know, they got awesome deals on 1.5s, 2 terabytes, you know, so you get a bunch of those. And, you know, you walk into my server room at home and it's like, you know, spare. Okay, so this is the class of drive that I have in this machine.
Nice.
Here
nice.
Are the spare drives for it.
All right, next question. Is there a, I just scroll past it. Is there a Thunderbolt card for PC?
We both did some research on this, trying to find a Thunderbolt card.
I mean, I saw a bunch of articles where ASUS was supposed to be coming out with set motherboards that you could get an upgrade Thunderbolt card for.
Right.
But I don't have that motherboard.
And the best that I've been able to find are, like, converter cards.
Yeah.
You know, that would take a Thunderbolt to, say, eSATA.
Yeah. I saw a bunch where you could take a PCIe card and stick it in this little case, and it works Thunderbolt.
Right.
But,
that's not what you're looking for.
No, not at all.
It doesn't appear as if one exists, or if one does exist, it is not here in the States.
Yeah.
But why were you looking for a Thunderbolt?
Well, it was just one of the mass storage devices I was looking at had Thunderbolt on it. And I was wondering, would I even be able to use that if I wanted to? And the benefit that I saw to that was that you could daisy chain them out. And so you could have, like, you know, one port and then it just keeps going
like
down
the line. Like old school SCSI.
Yeah. But then I was like, I'm probably not going to get the second, third, fourth device anyway,
right.
So it doesn't really matter, but I'll just go USB 3 or eSATA.
Yeah, I would go eSATA personally, because if you're looking for the raw throughput, eSATA is significantly, well, I wouldn't say significantly better, but it is better because you're not using the USB controller.
Yeah.
As you're using some CPU power when you're on USB. USB 3 is a 5 gig per second transfer with CPU overhead. eSATA, you got 6, you know, if you're maxing that out, with less CPU overhead there.
Okay.
Still, you can have power transfer over eSATA, you know, no problems there. I personally prefer it.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
It's a more stable cable.
You've got a meeting here coming up, too, just so you know. All right, so next question from a family member who likes to rest their pinky on the shift key. What are sticky keys and how do I turn them off?
Sticky keys, filter keys are all accessibility features. They're under the ease of access center here in the control panel. Here are the sticky keys. So sticky keys are, you know, if you have to do Alt F4 or Control Delete, you have to hold multiple keys at the same time, use both hands. Sticky keys is basically allowing you to hit one key at a time. So, you know, if you have mobility issues, if you're, you know, just not able to do the multiple combinations, you can just do one key at a time, makes it easier.
Yeah, or if you've got a big, tall, cold drink in one hand and you want to do Control-Alt-Delete, just hit Shift 5 times and then Control-Alt-Delete. And you don't have to set your drink down.
There you
don't
go.
Don't ask how I know that. And so, you can also hit Windows U to get Ease of Access Center, too.
Right. Yeah, so there's a bunch of different things here under the making the keyboard easier to use, adding additional keyboards. I know a lot of people like Dvorak as a better keyboard than QWERTY.
That's what they say.
I've used it a few times. It does take a while to get used to.
Yeah.
I've not yet converted over.
Okay, next question from Andre. I saw some questions about how users can install the 8.1 upgrade if they can't use a store. For example, when the users run Windows 8 on a netbook with XYZX600 resolution, or if the store is broken for whatever reason.
So if you're running on a machine that is less resolution than the minimum store resolution, or a minimum Windows Store app resolution, then it's not a machine that was capable for Windows 8 in the first place. So it's like, meh, too bad, so sad.
Okay.
If you are one of those people, that means that you got Windows 8 in, you know, a different manner. You bought it retail, and you're not using the Windows Store interface, the modern interface. In that case, you'll also have access to the retail media of 8.1, and you'd have to do a clean install or an upgrade off of that, but you would not be able to upgrade through the store.
Okay. Another from Andre, in fact, we have a whole list of them from Andre. Installing the .NET Framework 3.5 on Windows 8 fails when you install a MUI pack.
MUI pack.
Before trying to add .NET 3.5.
Yeah, so if you're installing .NET 3.5, what you want to do is you can use dism command, and there's a KB article on this. We can link to it in the show notes. All you really have to do is add multiple sources for the different MUI packs in order to pick up the .NET 3.5 resources for all of those languages.
Okay, and MUI stands for?
Multi-Language User Interface.
Awesome. Okay. Next from Andre, is it possible to have the start screen open all the time on the second monitor to get information from the tiles while working with desktop programs on my main monitor? If this doesn't work in 8.0, does it work in 8.1?
No, the start screen, as in, has always been a transitory thing. Mm-hmm. So it's not designed to be up all of the time anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's a launcher, program launcher.
Yep. All right, from Paulo, he says, I have a laptop with an English-US keyboard, but I and my family are used to a Portuguese keyboard, and there's no Portuguese keyboard for this laptop. I usually set it up as a Portuguese because I know where the keys are supposed to be, but because a Portuguese keyboard has one more key, I end up without a less than and greater than. Is there a way to map, say, the caps lock key to, looks like, greater than slash less than key?
Yeah, actually there is. There's a tool that's been available for a really long time called Sharp Keys. It's basically a UI to registry edits in order to remap the keys. So it's nothing super magical or anything, but it's pretty highly recommended. I've used it before, and it's nice and simple because it can undo the changes that are made, and again, since it's only a registry setting for it, it makes it actually pretty simple.
Yeah.
And it's here on CodePlex.
Cool. Okay. All right, next question from Juan. After updating a Surface Pro from Windows 8 to Windows 8.1 RTM, every time I start a remote desktop connection from a desktop machine, also with Windows 8.1 RTM, the wireless connection on the Surface died. I can see the logon screen on the desktop PC and the Surface goes to the lock screen.
So there have been updates for the Surface Pro, and there will be some coming out probably by the time this show airs for the network card. So do check Windows Update for updates to the network card. Another thing would be, you know, what kind of wireless network are you on? Are you on N, A, B, G? Mm-hmm. You can try disabling N on the wireless card itself in the wireless properties. See if that makes any difference. I've heard anecdotally that on some wireless networks, disabling N on the Surface actually does help.
Okay. All right, from Andre, tried to search for updates in audit mode and it fails. Windows OOBE is still in progress. AU, deferring to detection. Warning, failed to find updates with error code 8024A008. What does that code mean? The error.exe from Windows 7 SDK doesn't know the code.
So that basically says Windows Update can't do it, OOBE in progress. Mm-hmm. So audit mode is equivalent to OOBE.
And OOBE is?
The out-of-box experience. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's that first screen that when you first start up the machine, you know.
First time you power on brand new machine from the store.
Exactly, and you have to go through that, create a new user account, accept the EULA, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That's OOBE. So audit mode is saying that, you know, OOBE is in progress, which means that you can't check for updates. So basically, if you're in this type of mode, make sure that you've already got your updates before going into audit mode. Don't bother checking for updates in audit mode. It makes no sense.
Okay. Next question. Some users ask if it's possible to upgrade a 8.0 VHD, which is used a native boot to 8.1. Setup tells this. This PC can't run Windows 8.1. You can't install Windows on a virtual drive. Is there any documentation available of the VHD upgrade limitations?
There is a KB article on the limitations that was for Windows 7, but oddly enough, this particular article does not have the upgrade restriction. Mm-hmm. I've put in a request to get that updated. But yes, if you're natively booting a VHD, from the boot menu that you can do, you can't upgrade Windows. If you're actually running within a VM, then you can. It's not a problem. But we have certain filter limitations that in our storage stack that says that we can't actually, we just didn't really want to have this as a configuration.
Yeah.
To do an upgrade within a VHD.
Nice. All right, pick of the week time. And the first pick of the week is Oculus. Talk about Oculus Rift. I got my Oculus and I've been playing around with it. It's pretty cool. I talked a little bit about it on This Week on Channel 9 last week. And so
What's the best game to play with it?
Best game for me, I would say, is so far Flight Sim.
Okay.
So, I'm a big FSX fan. So that would be my favorite. I haven't gotten it to work with Battlefield 4. When it was in the beta, the beta just ended, and now it's 2 weeks till the game comes out. So I'm looking forward to that because flying a helicopter in Battlefield 4 is unbelievable.
So when you move your head, do you actually see the cockpit and the window?
Yeah. So yeah, you can move your head all around. You can see everything around you, and it's super cool. Mm. So I really like that. As far as one of the things I talked about on This Week on Channel 9 is I don't think that I would be able to use it for an extended period of time, more than an hour. Mm-hmm. It would just be too much for me. And now that I have this kind of wraparound iFinity set up on my desk, that I give that preference. That still has head tracking. I turn and I see, different things on the screens, mm-hmm. but I don't have to wear anything on my face. It's not the screen door effect of, seeing each pixel and stuff like that. So
how heavy is it?
not heavy at all. Okay, it, that part won't bother you a bit. So yeah, it's pretty cool, and I've been playing around with it and I'm trying all the different tech demos and stuff like that. One of the interesting things that I saw was they have some microphones that are shaped like ears that they're using for recording stereoscopic video, so that when you're watching a stereoscopic video, it sounds, you know, just like it would if a human was there to listen to it, mm-hmm. which I thought that was kind of cool too. There's a the Hydra controller, which will give you a little bit of, like, you know, see your arms in 3D space. Hopefully there's lots of things going on with Kinect, so that you can do Kinect. And then there's another one that you you had up here too, if you want to click that first link there. But there's another Kickstarter which has a, like, kind of a body sensor for the most part, where you can track your body in 3D. So this would be probably similar to Kinect, only you don't have to have, as you mentioned, line of sight that Kinect would require. So yeah, lots of cool stuff with Oculus. Another pick of the week that I wanted to talk about real quick was a Wired magazine article on how to keep your battery conditioned. And I'll link to that in the show notes. We'll just talk about it briefly, but it was my thought a long time ago that I should keep my batteries dead. Mm-hmm. And then when that didn't work out so good, I thought, well, I'll just keep them charged all the time. And this Wired magazine article, 4 lithium polymer batteries.
Right.
That's the caveat here.
Which are the latest batteries.
So ideally, they should go up to 80%, drain down to 40, charge back up to 80, drain down to 40, which I don't know how you would ever manage that other than, I mean, maybe a BIOS manufacturer could make something that does that automatically to keep your batteries conditioned. But
well, I mean, for Windows, you can get a low battery notification, so you could do that at 40%.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Right?
You could do that.
So you get a notification that says, you know, now you don't want to charge.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a notification at, you know, once it gets up to 80. Well, I suppose you could do, you know, the low notification is at 80 and the critical notification is at 40.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you could sort of do that.
That's interesting, yeah.
But I don't, I don't know what it would do going from the 40 to the 80 if you'd actually get a low notification at that point, or if it's only when it's draining down.
Hmm.
I've not actually seen the notification going higher, because usually what happens when you get to that notification, you shut down your machine, you plug it in, and go all the way to 100.
Yeah. So I would say maybe if you charge your battery to 80 and just pull your battery out if you're going to be on power
for
a long time.
Right.
Although that's kind of my backup UPS system, is having the battery in my laptop. But yeah, that's all right. I guess if my battery goes bad, I'll end up just getting a new battery. But
I mean, I've had batteries, you know, that for 5-6 years that are still going strong.
Yeah.
So take it with a grain of salt. I wouldn't try to game it too much if you're, you know, affecting your usage
pattern.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
go
nuts looking for the 40-80 thing.
Right.
And just,
you also have to be able to use your machine, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're constantly doing that, it's like, okay, well, why did I get a laptop kind of thing? If I'm, you know, kind of twitching it, okay, I need to plug into mains now. Okay, no, I need to unplug mains.
All right, and then the last, most important pick of the week, Windows 8.1. is going to be out by the time this airs.
Yeah.
So we're going to throw the dice here and let you talk about it on the hopes that this airs after.
This machine?
You'll have to now.
Yeah, I mean, this machine is running 8.1. It's actually pretty stock. You know, super large tile. Not a lot of differences. Well, very, very little difference, especially on the desktop.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I liked was the
nice
new
update.
Keyboard.
Yeah,
was nice.
This keyboard that has you know, the number row on top where you just have to press and hold versus what you had to do.
Yeah.
Here, you know, you had to go back from the keyboard and hit the number keys all the time.
And I like the option of choosing from several different keyboards too, because I like a big keyboard that has all the keys on it and stuff. So it's nice that I can choose that as well.
Yep.
Nice. Any other updates to 8.1 that you want to point out?
Oh, there's too many.
Yeah.
We could do an entire show on that.
We should just either, we'll talk about it next week, but we'll also link to a list of all the updates.
Sure.
All the stuff that's in 8.1 in the show notes. You can check that out, and then we'll talk about it next week.
Cool.
All right, that's the show for this week. If you have questions, write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, and we will see you next week.
Take care. We'll be right back.
Thank you.